Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, yet again, it is I. It is the F-World icon, the host with the most, Sean Jazz Stevens here. And I am here tonight to welcome you to another awesome episode of the F-World Headquarters. It is yours truly, as I just mentioned, Sean Jazz Stevens. And of course, today we have a mega show. Many, many things we must connect with and many things to chat about. People to shout out, knowledge to pass out, and I am just making my tea now. I apologize. By the way, a quick first shout out to Brutalities, as I am making my favorite. I mean they have a lot of great flavors, but the Asaba Go-Go is probably one of my favorite tea brands by Brutalities to do this podcast with. So. Big shout out to Brutalities. They're a great tea brand. Not sponsoring us, but I just want to shout them out because they're awesome. Same thing goes for our friends over at Dead Sled Coffee because they're another great coffee place. So coffee and tea, two of the best coffee and tea places out there, two separate entities. You know, I think when I go to see them at Monster Mania in August, I should try to kind of link them together. I think that'd be a great opportunity for both brands to come together. I think in the end, it might actually be more beneficial to both, even though they're both, individually awesome. Tea and coffee are two separate entities, and they do such an amazing job with the varieties they have. The flavors are bar none one of the best around. They're random, and they all have gimmicked named coffees and teas. They have a similar practice, but imagine having coffee and tea and two entities like that working together. Dead Sled and Brutalities. What a great pair that would be. Anyway, yes, I am preparing my tea, so awesome. And I got another shout out to my wife, who a couple of years ago, she got me this headset I'm using right now, and it has like a microphone on it, and it's Bluetooth. It is probably one of my favorite devices I have. My daughter got me a microphone for this show, which is also awesome. And usually I combine the two. So that way there I have the headphones for some and then the microphone for the sound. But this headset actually does both. So big shout out to both my wife and my daughter for, giving me the tools to reach you guys because they both believe in the words that are coming out of yours truly. And because they believe in yours truly. Don't believe me? Ask them. Anyway. All right, everyone. It's been a little bit, a couple weeks, and I've been doing a lot more. And for those people who have missed it and have lived under a rock, I did take a little bit of a time away from the whole, social media thing. I got to say, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I actually didn't mind not being on. It wasn't that I didn't miss talking to people I talk to on a regular basis or whatever, but just I would much rather connect in other places and other ways. And as I mentioned on the podcast when I announced that I was going to return to some of those media sites, I can't punish the ones who are good because of a couple bad eggs out there, and it wouldn't be right or fair for me to do that. Because for every negative person out there and who like to mock and insult what I do and what we do here, there's plenty of people out there who are willing and open to the opportunity to make their goals happen, to learn how to get those things done, to hopefully help someone who, like myself, had to earn everything they have and achieve those goals that might seem out of reach. A lot of people when I was growing up said, there's no way you're going to be a pro wrestler. You don't have the money. You don't know anybody in it. guess what? Spoiler alert. At the time, no, I didn't know anybody in pro wrestling, but I did believe in me in my years in training in various martial arts and also Greco-Roman wrestling that helped prepare me for my pro wrestling career. And, thanks to some help from people who believed in my goals and my dreams, I was able to achieve those things. And 6 months before I graduated high school, I started training in pro wrestling. So So, and when I graduated high school, I was well on my way there. And a lot of people think, well, if you played sports in high school, clearly, you know, you did, you know, you clearly gave up your senior year of high school to, you know, go to wrestling afterwards. And no, that's not how that worked. You see, I am loyal to my teams always. That's the first thing and foremost. Granted, wrestling was my own personal goal, my own personal dream. But when I joined the soccer team, aka football, for the fellow soccer players of the world, the football players like myself, I do refer to soccer, who Americans call soccer, but for the world fans and myself, I call it football. Sorry, that's just how I do things because that's how I was trained and taught about it. So football, soccer to the American audience, was, you know, a commitment that I began. And when they moved me from, you know, they saw that I was not going to be able to sit on the freshman team, too much drive for that. So they put me on the junior varsity team. And then my sophomore year all the way, or my, what do they call it? And I actually just found out today in other places in the country, in the world, they don't necessarily go by grades, which I kind of knew anyway. But for the worldwide audience, my second year of, I guess you guys would call, you know, it would be high school, but I think you guys call it some other type of school. I know university is what we call college here. I did that too, but that was after I got injured. But anywho, running off on the rambit there, sorry. But in general, you know, I joined the soccer team and I was committed to my team. And the one thing, here's something I told my own kids when they were getting ready to go into high school. And this is a tip I like to give a lot of young people who are getting ready to start in school. Or this is also a tip to anyone who moves in the middle of school season, who is going to be beginning in the fall, say. I always suggest joining either a soccer team, a sports team, a club of some kind that has going on in the school. It's a good idea before you start at that school or that university or whatever your learning place is to see what they have to offer. Find something you have an interest in and then join something. For two reasons. One, it'll help give you structure. It'll give you something to do at school. It'll actually make your school days a little bit more enjoyable, to get through those school days. And it'll help you give, you know, help you, you know, have commitment to your school and take your, you know, it also prepare you in life for your commitments in work, which is what school is, in essence. And then the other thing is it gives you a sense of responsibility for two things. One, you're responsible because if you're not there to support, if you don't go or show up to school, you can't play whatever the sport is that you're, you know, actively on. And if you don't show up to your sports teams, then you failed your team and your team could lose. Your team needs you. And if you're not there to help them out, then, and they lose, that's because you didn't show up. And I know for myself, I take my commitments very, very seriously. And when I sign on to something, I'm in for that, you know, and that's something I'm all in on. So it's, you know, a commitment point. So it makes you want to go to school because you don't want to miss school because you don't want to let your teammates down, your school down, or yourself down. That's the biggest thing. It gives you that extra edge. Sometimes we all get there where, oh, I'm tired. I don't want to go to school. I don't want to do this. But you realize if you don't get up out of bed and get ready and go about your day and go to school, then what's going to end up happening is, you know, practice is going to come. You might not feel like going to practice. Practice isn't for everybody, right? You're wrong, because if you don't go to practice, there might be a play you don't know about. There might be something that happens to practice, some announcement made. There might be an announcement of a coach being there or a talent scout. And if you're not there to hear about that stuff, then you're late to the party. One, when you show up, you're going to be doing extra laps because any coach will do that, no matter who it is, because that teaches you responsibility. And the reason they have you do that isn't to punish you. It's to remind you why you're there. It's to show you why it's not respectful of your teammates. That's why you do the extra laps, because you got to make up that time that your teammates showed up to do. You didn't show up, and that's why you got to do those extra laps. And I always, you know, for the most part, I am one of the most overly punctual people you'll meet. If I have to be somewhere, I'm usually about 2 hours early, because I freak out if I'm not there. I like to be early places, and that's just how I am. But that helped me get through school, being involved in first soccer, and then because I enjoyed the soccer, aka football, you know, I continued, and then I joined the Greco-Roman wrestling team, which is high school wrestling for those people, Greco-Roman style, because I need to, you know, differentiate between, you know, pro wrestling and Greco-Roman, which is two completely different things. Pro wrestling is not necessarily wrestling. It is wrestling to it in a different manner, where Greco-Roman wrestling is the wrestling that is an actual sport represented in the Olympics. Not the stuff, you mean, you can see both on TV now, so I guess you can't even use that as a thing anymore. Basically, it's the amateur wrestling. It's the wrestling that doesn't have the weird colors and the, you know, larger than life people who, you know, make loud noises and so forth. But my years of training in freestyle tournaments and whatnot prepared me for the other half. But, you know, I got into Greco-Roman wrestling. That was my winter sport. And then in the fall, well, fall was always football, aka soccer. Summer, winter was always Greco-Roman wrestling. And then in the springtime, I was on the swim team. People will look at me now like, you were on the swim team? Oh, yeah. When I was about 12 years old, I was a small, skinny, scrawling little guy. And, you know, I honestly needed to change something. Even in on the mats, I still had the drive and everything else. This is prior to high school, because I was 12, going in to be 13. And I'd asked my doctor at the time, when could I start lifting weights? And he told me that I should probably wait till I was about 13, because by that time your muscles are mature enough to handle a lot of that. Even though he knew I was already active with, you know, the training in martial arts, it was a lot different because that's more calisthenics, which you can build muscle with just calisthenics. But I actually wanted to add weightlifting into my equation, and I did. And I found out I'm a gym rat, is what they call this. A gym rat is one who pretty much lives in the gym, but lives by the gym, will go and work out all day in the gym, work out until they get sick in the gym, and then go back and do it more. I did that, and I really enjoyed weightlifting as well as calisthenics, and I used a lot of that. So needless to say, yeah, when I was in, you know, probably most of my younger life, I was in my teenage years, I was pretty much a pretty muscular individual, I guess you might say. I just say I was in shape. I don't know about being, you know, muscle size. A lot of people would look at me and say that I know some of my friends used to say that I was jacked. I said, I'm not jacked, because I'm a very low-key kind of guy anyway, so it's not like I'm going to boast about that. My wrestling character years later would, and he's kind of the wrestling character I portray years later is the exact opposite of who I am in real life. In real life, I'm very modest. On the wrestling world, I'm, you know, as the Jazz Fitness character is the complete opposite. He's a very overcompensating individual, very much, you know, high opinion of himself, which in real life I don't have any of those things. In life, I'm just me. That's what I'll always say. When someone says something positive about me, usually my response is, it's just me. I'm not good. I'm not bad. I'm not tough. I'm not strong. I'm just me. If you guys remember, a couple weeks ago, I had about a couple weeks ago, I had the Mina boys on, Henry and Hiro Mania, our current tag team champions for the Telenet tag team is on our YouTube show. Also, in real life, our MMA, you know, rising stars in the MMA world and boxing world and kickboxing and fighting and whatnot. And Henry and Hiro Mania, you know, are the epitome of why I do my shows, because they're kind of the people that, you know, respect the ethic of, you know, why we do what we do. They're fighters, much like the Stritzel Fight Club, Mason and Carter Stritzel, who, all honesty, I've known them a little longer, but my respect for both groups are, both camps are very, is very much the same. Mason and Carter Stritzel are absolute beasts in their training regiment. Henry and Hyro are beasts also. Henry and Hyro are people who also, you know, incorporate showmanship and incorporate a lot of other different elements into their equation, which I think makes them very much well-rounded fighters. And I think they're going to go pretty far because they're able to adapt a lot of different things. I think the Stritzels are very tough and very strong. They're masters of jujitsu. The Menya boys are trained in jujitsu as well as doing kickboxing and other things as well. Both groups are amazing, like I said, just different training regiments. Both have drive. Both, all of them have grit, which is what you need in fighting and combat and anything else. And that I know a lot about. I'm very excited because we have on this show, one of the reasons I do my shows is to inspire others and to scope out the future talents. And one of the things I've had a gift for is knowing and being able to separate, you know, the real competitors of the world, the real dream masters, if you would, and the people who are just kind of going with the flow, the people who are there because they want to be there, the people who are going to go far, the people you should look out for. And let me tell you, first and foremost, there are a lot of very talented fighters and families out there who are doing the same things, who have a drive, who have that mentality that you need in these sports. You need them to survive. You need them to fight. And it's awesome. It's good stuff, man. It's great stuff to see. Some of those people are people we have not had a lot on the show yet, but there are people who I think people need to be aware of because I think they're going to be rising people. And, you know, some people can, you know, advertise and say what they want. And whatnot. And some are not. Like I said. Now, there's going to be people in life who are going to want to do certain elements, and there's going to be some people who just aren't. That goes in combat, goes in filmmaking, it goes no matter what your goals are. So I want to, you know, let you guys know that, you know, there's always going to be someone to take the place of someone else. There's always going to be someone out there who's going to want to be that combat person. There's going to be someone who's going to want, quote, the spot. And I can tell you from experience that it's going to happen eventually. You're going to want to be there. You're going to be, you know, if you want something bad enough, you're going to be willing to work for it and you're going to achieve it. That's plain and simple. And families like the Menya boys, the Stritzel Fight Club, Jojo Sebastian. Jojo the Model Sebastian, of course, is not into combat sports. He does know some karate. He wants to be a model. And you know what? He's working towards it. He's going to do it. He does a great job at doing that. He's also incorporating music into his equation. We had Walker Campbell on this show not long ago, the musician. He's doing all kinds of things. He's doing acting. He's doing music. He's open opportunities. He's playing sports. He's doing a mix of both, you know, the whole equation, right? And that's important to do. And that's important to keep those things level and on that level. Now, we have some new people who I've been, you know, watching. I watch everybody. I know the talents that is rising. And I know when the time's coming. And I can tell you that I recently reached out to some of these people. And I said, listen, you guys are doing great work. You guys should be commended. And I, you know, heard that they were doing other things. So I'm very excited because, you know, the Russells are going to be coming on the show. And they're from the East Coast, and they're doing the combat thing. They're doing the wrestling thing and the combat thing. They're doing great stuff. Of course, Angela Russell is going to be part of that, as well as, you know, her son, who has been, loyal to the show. And both individuals, you know, her son and her and whoever else and whatever. They're going to be on the show, and they're going to talk about their journey in combat. We haven't had them on the show yet. It's always nice to meet new people, to add them into it. Grayson is his name, in case you guys didn't know. But he's going to be, they're going to be coming on the show because, you know, I reward those who, you know, put the work in to get these things done. It's not easy. To get whatever it is done, you got to get it done. And being a successful combat person, and when it comes to MMA, you need to have drive. You have to have the grit. You have to have determination. And Grayson, the Super Duck, actually, is his nickname, which is awesome, too. We're going to have to find out where the Super Duck comes from. That's awesome. I wonder if that's like the Disco Duck. Anyway, I'm dating myself on that one. But anyway, we'll be having Grayson and the Russell family on to talk about their journeys in MMA, which will be exciting. But, you know, we also have all kinds of other people who have talked about various different goals that they have. And no matter what it is that you want to do, you need to make sure you're working towards those things, have the heart for it, have the grit for it. And you know what? No matter what goal it is, you're going to have that wall that you're going to come to eventually, and you're going to have to decide, do I want to go over it? Do I want to stay at it? Or do I want to go around it? Or do I just want to stop? It happens. We had Christian Goodwin on the show a long while ago. He was, when I met him years ago, he was in, you know, just breaking into the acting world. He did very good things in acting, probably one of the best actors out of New England. And, of course, he comes from the hometown, and he's Boston Strong, of course. So got to take care of our local guys. But also on top of that, you know, he talked about on the show how, you know, he loved it, but he really wanted to go into some music. And he talked about the struggles with, if you want to be in the acting thing, that's, you're going to take, it's going to take a, you know, a toll on you, because you're going to sacrifice that for your social life and time away from your friends and your family. Because in order to go into filmmaking and to be successful in that, you have to literally have that mindset. You have to be willing to just, okay, well, I got this film now. And film, television, no matter what your projects are, like next year I have several projects coming up. I'm just jamming everything in one show. Look at that. So here we go. This is kind of what I'm known for, just making sure everyone has everything intact. But, like, this is what I mean. You have to keep going and making forwards and working towards your goals, and everything leads into something. On my shows, in real life, in wrestling, in everything, the people I've made along the way has been very helpful and very beneficial. I think it's important to give tribute to those who help us get to where we need to be. And I'm going to tell you, a lot of these people are very inspirational. A lot of these people are people that I think anyone any age can take note of. Michael Fishman, actor, director, producer, kind of a do-it-all. He can do pretty much anything as Michael Fishman. He's done pretty much everything that there is. Everything from, you know, shoveling driveways all the way to, you know, headlining a television show and directing a television show, directing movies, working, acting, lighting, carpentry, you name it. But the best of the thing is he's a dad. And, well, you know, automatically when you're a dad and you're a parent, you already get an automatic check mark if you're doing that. And Michael Fishman, who was one of our first guests on the show, and I'm really proud of him. He's really evolved. And I think a lot of people it's easy to kind of overlook how small someone thinks that someone else is, or not someone is, but it's easy to overlook the different lessons you can learn from those individuals in different ways. What I mean by that, because I know that seems like it's all over the place, let me be clear on this. Michael Fishman, much like myself, he comes from the entertainment world. I come from the pro wrestling world. This is something that a lot of people who have never been either one can really relate to. And that's the fact that Hollywood, showbiz, you know, that kind of thing, and same thing with pro wrestling and other things, it takes such a toll on you in many, many different ways. And a lot of people believe that this is something they always want. And a lot of people believe, or they think that this, it's one thing and it's completely something else. And Michael Fishman himself will tell you, life is not all sunshine and rainbows being on the, you know, the biggest television show ever made. You know, we all go through those things. What about the people that help us get there? And that's one of the other things I really respect about people like Michael Fishman and, you know, people like JoJo, Sebastian, people like the Menya Boys, people like the Stritzels, people, other people. These are people who are willing to listen to ideas to help get them where they need to be. They're people who are not shut off from being open to other suggestions. Michael Fishman, who's a Hollywood actor who can do a lot of other things, he takes time out of his schedule to listen to regular people talk about various different things. He is not afraid to talk about and break down the wall with stigma for when it comes to mental health and everything else. He's been through a lot, looks like everyone else has. The only difference is he's got the guts to talk about what it's like to go through those things and show, hey, listen, yes, I'm on a big television show, but it's not all sunshine and rainbows, because it's not. To be a fighter, to be a combat person, that's not all sunshine and rainbows either. And I can tell you that from my experience. And this is something for the future fighters of the world, because I know there's a lot of people who are going to, their goal might be to be the next UFC champion. You know what? If that's your goal, do it. Don't talk about it. Do it. And you can't do it unless you actually train in something, by the way. I can't tell you how many people, you know, have this idea and say, oh, I want to do this and I want to do that. And I'm sure a lot of you guys probably know people like this, or maybe you are one of these people who just kind of, I'd like to do this, I want to do this, but either one, you don't know how, or two, sometimes it's easier to want than actually put the work in to do. And the people I mentioned just a few minutes ago, no matter what kind of area it is that you want to achieve, you need to be able to put the work in to get there. That takes heart. That takes grit, that takes commitment, that takes sacrifice to get there. I can tell you from combat stuff, I'm talking about like MMA stuff. I trained in several styles of martial arts. They're all different styles. I broke that into, I'd have a few hours in one class, same place, and then another sensei would come in and I'd learn from that guy and then another guy. So I was learning three or four different styles in one day. But it was like 9 hours, 10 hours of practice. And then I'd go home and practice those things afterwards. And that's something that I committed to. Started when I was 4 years old. I started competing in combat tournaments, or we called them freestyle tournaments back then. Now they're known as, you know, junior MMA type events. But back then they were freestyle tournaments that were held regionally and statewide and different various tournaments. Yeah, and I did well. The Menya Boys, when they were on, they asked me what my record was. And I had to actually think about it. What is my record? I never kept track. I know that I had one tie on my record, and it bothered me. And this is something that only a fighter would understand. This is something that someone who's done these things can actually relate to. A lot of other people are like, oh, you have a tie in your record? That's not a big deal. To me, it was. And I'll tell you why. I got that literally came in when I was about 10 years old, that tie. And I had been training and doing combat. I've been doing these tournaments since I was five. Training since I was four, did the tournaments when I was five. So from 5 to 10, I never lost the fight. That I can tell you. And I had almost every other weekend or whatever else, several a month. And unfortunately, the only person who really got that this was important to me was my grandmother, who was the one who paid for these lessons to me. And she saw the commitment I had. A lot of other people doubted, and a lot of other people just didn't get it. Because, you know, on the mat, I was one of the most fiercest people out there because I like to study people. I enjoy chess. I enjoy games, and that's how I looked at combat sports, as a game of human chess. I still look at everything in life as a game of chess. And again, if you're into the combat world, if it's wrestling, if it's MMA, if it's some type of martial art, if it's Muay Thai, which I also been trained in, if it's boxing, whatever, what it is, I'll tell you, I look at all of that like chess. And it's all a game of learning. What are you going to do? Technique. learning what is the other person going to do, doing your homework. Now, here's what's different between now and then, right? When I was growing up in the 80s and the 90s, there's two things that were different. One, and I just talked to a friend of mine who had been training. And I've been back to help my old buddy of mine, who I trained with years and years ago, as we trained under the same sensei years ago. Our sensei unfortunately passed away and left the school to my friend who's been running it. They just recently, a couple of years ago, started doing tournaments. They weren't doing the greatest. So he asked me to come in and give him some pointers because, you know, tournaments was always kind of my thing because I believe in the psychology part of it, because that's honestly what it comes down to. And a lot of people don't understand that part of it. A lot of people think it's just doing arm bars, choke holds, and kicks. Oh, no, there's more to being successful than just doing arm bars, choke holds, and kicks. It's about knowing when to do those things, who to do them to, and at what point you do it. That's how that works. And also having the mindset to kind of be able to read what's going on in a situation. I'm going to tell a story later on. Maybe not be today, but maybe I'll wait for that story. It's about what happens when you get injured and then continue to fight, because this happens too. I'm not going to talk about that right now because that would take too long. But I did want to kind of give you a rough note. So I'm going to go into a deep dive about my training and what it was like for me to compete at these tournaments. Let me tell you, I'm 42 years old, and my son likes to remind me of what reminds me of all the time. I forget how old I am. Why do I forget? My often go-to excuse that anyone in my family will tell you is I've been hit with too many chair shots. It's going to be my first go-to excuse, as I can feel my wife shaking her head yes behind me. And indeed she is. I just looked just to make sure. So, yes, that is a thing. And that's something that I can use because not everyone did the pro wrestling thing. It's an excuse I can use. But it's a joke. But don't misunderstand. I definitely remember everything that I've been through and my journey to get to where I need to be. So in the moment, I don't know how old I am. I don't feel anything in the moment. Anyone who's ever done any kind of, any kind of a sport can probably identify with this, is that kind of grit and that factor where you shut that pain button off. Because I'll tell you, when it comes to competing, when it comes to either on a field, on the mat, in a ring, it doesn't matter, or on a stage for me, honestly, I don't feel anything when I'm doing what I'm expected to do. That sounds ridiculous, but only the people who have never done any sports and who are not people who have done these things, anyone who has done these commitment sports, who has done any of these things, knows exactly what this is. You don't feel anything in the moment. They can kick, punch, kick. Don't really feel it until afterwards, the next day. And as you get, maybe when you're younger, it doesn't register as much, but when you're older, you definitely don't feel it as much, but you definitely feel it more as time goes on. My knee got injured when I was in fourth grade. That injury happened not in an MMA match. Nope, it wasn't in one of those, because it wasn't MMA when I was doing it. It was freestyle tournaments. So it wasn't that I got injured. I got injured playing football, aka soccer, and it was for school and not on the team. It was for like gym class. It was because the kid I was fighting with in real life, who was a real life bully, because my team won in the soccer game, as they called it, and because I scored that goal and he hated the fact that I was the opposite of him, he did what we call a chop block to my left knee and blew my knee out. When I was in fourth grade, and at that point I had already trained in martial arts, I never had an injury. Have I been kicked and punched and kicked? And oh yeah, you bet I did. Have people attempted to choke me out and all these things? Oh, absolutely. Did they? No. Why? Because I wouldn't let them, obviously, and because I was one step ahead of them. But that was the confidence level I had to have. Now, fast forward to when I was 10 years old and I have this tournament. Right, I have all this momentum, and I'm facing this kid at another school, because that's how we did it. We took on other schools from other various places. I think the school was not even in our state, actually. It was in another state this kid came from. So we had to face off, and, you know, back then there was no internet, so you couldn't just Google the person to find out what they've done. There was no YouTube, so you couldn't watch any fights anywhere. There was no social media, so you couldn't see what they else they've done. The way you got your respect is by word of mouth, and the way they talked about you is how your word spread of who you were. Our class, our school, was probably one of the best. I'm not saying they're the greatest, but they were good. But I can tell you this, when I came to the mat, people knew. And it wasn't because I was this, you know, tough guy. It was because I enjoyed the psychology factor of the game. I enjoyed the psychology factor of the fight. Because it's not just about throwing fists or throwing kicks or putting someone in an armbar. It's, again, like I said, it's about knowing when to use them, at what point, and various other things. Being able to read the person you're going to fight ahead of time. And back then, the only way you were able to do that, again, was by word of mouth or by, you know, somehow once in a while you would have someone who goes to another tournament somewhere else and they'll record the person who watched the old school as tape, right? And in wrestling, they do the same thing. They call it watching tape. So you'll see what someone else did and you'll adapt it. They do that in a lot of other sports to prepare them for various things. Football, basketball, soccer, aka football, all of these different sports, they use this kind of a technique where they'll watch something that the other team has done. They still use this, by the way. Now it's considered, I guess, you know, it's one thing, I want to be clear on this. I'm talking about when they played a game of sports and they record that. I'm not saying about looking at their playbooks and all that other stuff. That's not fair and that's not right. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you do the old-fashioned thing and you watch the game. You don't need to know what the coach was doing. You just need to know what the team is doing. And that's the reality of it. That's the psychology factor of the combat, of the sport or whatever else. And again, that can be adapted to any sport you're doing. In all honesty, that could probably be adapted to any of your other elements, whatever it is you're trying to do. If you want to be a great actor, you got to watch great, you know, you watch some great performances. If you want to get ready for a great, a stage play or something, you listen to something that'll get you ready for there. If you're going to be singing a song, it's probably a good idea to know a few, right? So this is something that you can utilize to get you that extra edge. That's for anyone, everywhere. Now, recently I have announced that I am returning to MMA. Who are the people I want to face? That was a question I've been asked. Well, Jazz, if you're going to return to MMA at 42 years old, number one, are you going to live? Number two, and two, who are you going to fight? And three, are you out of your mind? Will be another question that a lot of other people will answer. And then the answer to all of those questions, in no particular order, is because I can. Because I'm me, and, well, as far as who I want to face, and a lot of people know this because I've talked about it before, I was scheduled to have a UFC exhibition fight a long while ago. This is prior to the events that kind of froze the world for a little while, including combat sports and everything else that put everything on hold. So I was scheduled to have a fight with a certain YouTube celebrity who I may or may not have fictitious heat with. Of course, he happens to be who we refer to as the Prince of Pop, from the Canadian Prince of Pop. You guys could kind of put the, you know, two and two together who that was supposed to be. Unfortunately, the pandemic hit, that got postponed, and then, you know, even though I was still getting ready for an actual UFC thing. And I told the story before how that came to be. It came down to he made a challenge to somebody he knew he wasn't going to fight him. And then I had rebutted it on the site that I made, YouTube. And I called him out for calling the other guy out and said, I'll fight you anytime you want. And that was when the president had reached out to me, Dana White, and said, you know, were you serious about the comments you made? Would you actually fight him? Because he's looking to have an exhibition fight. And I said, like a heart attack, tell me where and when and I'm there, is what I said. And I stood by it, and I prepared, and my team prepared, and a lot of some of my very close friends who both did UFC as well as MMA, who also trained in martial arts, even said, oh, yeah, he's ready. What's funny is, you know, the thing hit, and we couldn't do it because of that got stopped. And then he said he was going on tour when we were about to again. And, you know, they were going to have fighting again in Vegas. They lifted the ban somewhat, and we were going to have the fight. And then that was when he decided he wanted to go on tour. So he did that for a little while. Come to think of it, I don't even know if that tour happened. But anyway, and then, you know, there was something else he wanted to do. And then there was another issue because I continued getting ready for this fight. I dropped serious weight, and I still had the training regimen that I had before, and I still have. And a lot of people, when they look at me, will say, well, this guy's a big guy. And clearly he's slow, and clearly he's not as, you know, he can't be fast. And the strategy probably is to outrun me and get me to get tired, which is the old rope-a-dope technique. But here's the thing about that. I use the rope-a-dope technique. So that doesn't work for me because, you know, again, the psychology factor. I'm going to talk about something in a minute, too, which is going to be kind of fun, an added element. Because I had a poll not long ago, and I asked people for a list of fighters, a list of people to give to me, and I will tell you how I would go about fighting them, what my strategy would be. I'm going to give those to you guys in a little while. That's towards the end. But for now, just know that I am currently getting ready to, again, I am still getting ready, but now we actually might have someone who wants to fight the YouTube sensation, me. And of course, he's another YouTuber who also likes to fight in the UFC. So I guess we'll see what happens then. more on that later. But I can tell you that I am going to be fighting in an MMA match against another YouTube celebrity. I'm saying that in quotation marks. I'm not a YouTube celebrity. I just do YouTube. A lot more to me than just YouTube. But anyway, that'll be fun. And in hindsight, as my wife has Happy Gilmore on, and I got the absolute worst angle when I looked at her for a second, I apologize. Oh, darn you, Adam Sandler. Anyway, okay. Multitasking. Now, as far as other things I got going on, I had an awesome meeting, and a lot of people know that I've been working on a film project and so forth, and I am going to tell you this. I did finalize, and I have secured, and as of my meeting just not long before this, right now, I had an amazing conversation with my mentor and the guy who I'm going to be adapting 6 of his short stories into film, script form. That's going to be a little of a challenge. But you know what's awesome is I already started doing so, and I've already have about 6 of them already done. I want to go over them again, and then I'll be sending those to him. And then once he gives the green light on everything, he's already given the green light on 3 of them. And once he's given the green light on everything else, let me tell you what I'm going to be doing. I'm not going to say exactly what it is, specifically as far as the name goes, but I can tell you this. Next year, I will be present. I will be busy, as well as extremely busy, as I am going to be working on my latest project. Is going to be a group of horror shorts by the King of Horror himself. There's a bunch of hints right there, but this is going to be an anthology type of event where it's going to be anyone who knows what an anthology is, that's all I'm going to say. I am currently working on a film project next year that is coming out that will be a horror anthology. My first, it's going to be great. No, I'm just kidding. It's not my first film for the record, but this is an anthology series, which is going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to it because of a couple reasons. One, it will give me the opportunity to do something different and honor one of the greatest writers of all time, and put to screen some of the best stories that have never been seen yet in a respectful manner that isn't discouraging or disrespectful to the source material. Let me tell you from a writing standpoint, I can tell you this. I've been writing for a long time, and when you have to adapt a short story into a full-length film, I know they've done this for other films by him, Stand By Me, Shawshank Redemption, Sometimes They Come Back, and several other Children of the Corn. These are all films that were short stories by this individual that were made into a film, a full-length film by themselves, and they were short stories. Now, when I had originally signed on to a lot of these stories were like 3 pages long. So, I mean, in hindsight, it's to get a full-length film out of a 3-page short story is quite a challenge for some. To me, I just found another way to do it. That's all. I just said, you know what? How about we do this? And thankfully, he is, you know, thought it was a great idea. So I have a lot of respect to him. And, you know, I owe him a lot, actually. He's helped me out with my autobiography, gave me a great tip that I've been using. So I'm also excited to say that beginning of next year, my first autobiography ever, my first full-length own book, is coming out the beginning of next year. So that should be interesting. And I actually had to get tips from him on how to write it, because here's the thing about my writing. I've been writing for a very long time, and I have no problem writing short stories that some people, when they read my short stories, consider them to be like half, you know, short novels instead of a story, admittedly guilted by that. But in hindsight, I can't sit to write one consistent story, because I get bored easy. I'm writing about several things. And when I write, this is the other part of it. When I write, I sit to write until it's completely done. I'm not like a lot of other writers who can write a chapter and leave it. I don't work that way. When I write something, it's in one sitting or it doesn't get done. And I don't believe in writing it beforehand, then typing it up, because that doesn't work either. I don't believe in writing in pencil. In fact, you know, someone asked me the other day, why don't I use a pencil? And you know what? I had to think about it. I don't think I've ever written. Actually, I have. When I was in first grade or when I was in elementary school, I used pencil, and that's probably why I don't like it. I don't think it looks as good. But also, it's not that I didn't make mistakes writing when I was in first, second, third, fourth grade. And yes, I was writing short stories in first, second, and third grade. They weren't by any means anything of greatness. In fact, in learning from my wife and, you know, things that she has written, heard about, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with these, what they call fictions, like fan fiction type things. And not, by the way, it's don't get all, you know, excited. This is not what you think it is going to be. But when I was younger, I had a thing. I really enjoyed the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So my early short stories consisted of various Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles short stories, or various different things that didn't happen and whatnot. But another thing that I did was if I saw something in a film back then that I didn't enjoy, I then went ahead and made a short story about it and fixed whatever I didn't like about that. Not a book. It's not a movie. It's a short story. But I would fix whatever I didn't like in that story or in that movie, and I would rewrite it in the way I wanted it to be because I didn't like the ending or whatever. Before I got older to realize that I'm not really into the whole sunshine rainbows all the time either in some films. Sometimes you have to go outside the box. And as I got older and progressed more and went to film school and all of the other things and the people I've met along the way, I learned to adapt that feeling. And I've also learned that you know, it gets old and stale after a while, seeing the same thing over and over again. How many times can Snow White be saved by the prince? How many times can, you know, Little Red Riding Hood defeat the fox and the wolf or whatever before, you know, eventually you have to have something where, well, then again, those movies I just mentioned and those stories that I've said are probably things you guys have all heard about, but how many people have actually read the actual stories associated with them? Because I, when doing research and I was in high school, I learned that a lot of those short stories, a lot of those stories that we grew up with, we still tell our kids. A lot of the movies that Disney will put out there, all these other companies will put out there, especially anything by the Grimm boys, anything by the Brothers Grimm, are going, the original stories are probably the early stages of the best horror films, horror stories ever written. Little Red Riding Hood did not have a very nice ending. And a lot of these other ones are absolutely terrible. But again, I'm not saying that to discourage people. I'm not saying that, you know, necessarily these are, you know, I understand why Disney changed a lot of that because no one wants to watch a movie where, you know, Little Red Riding Hood goes to see the Red Wolf and the wolf actually ate her and her grandmother. Not such a great ending there, and it's also a short film. or you know, other various Disney things that they took liberties with. I think anyone who can tell you anything about history can tell you Pocahontas will be is probably the most historically inaccurate films of all time. I've talked about it before in this show that there are some things I don't celebrate that I learned about in school that years later I would learn are not something that I particularly agree with, which is why in our house we don't celebrate Columbus Day. Anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about don't necessarily – I don't want to make sure I confuse you guys, but, you know, it's okay to celebrate whatever you want to celebrate. Just know what you're celebrating. Do your homework first. Not everything is all sunshine and rainbows, and if you put a lot of stock in – you know, Christopher Columbus, this is not a, this, that what I say, and I'm not even going to go into detail, but I am going to tell you that everything we learned in school after I actually did research and, you know, years later, I got older and understand, and I read a lot of things. That's when I decided to say, you know what, I'm not celebrating this day because this is not something we should be celebrating. And a lot of people, you know, think a lot about those things, but they don't necessarily go into detail. So it's important to really, if you really want to learn about something like that, really do your research on it is all I'm going to say about that. What is that? But I'm excited, though. Beginning of next year, my first autobiography will come out. And also, very excited, I'm actually, after I'm done with the final edits of writing it, I'm actually going to be doing an audiobook to it because I realized that how many people actually have time these days to actually physically read a book. Now, I'm going to say I'm guilty of this, that I read an actual physical book. I would much prefer an old school book. I like the physical feeling of the book in my hand. And I know from talking to a lot of my friends out there that they kind of feel the same way when it comes to books. Books are meant to be read in your hand, not to be read on a screen. Otherwise, it's, you know, not necessarily the same thing. But you know, whatever, as long as you're reading, you're reading. But I'm going to have the regular physical book, but I'm also going to be recording an audio book to accompany that, which is going to be me recording the whole book because I'm basically going to read my book and record that. So it's going to be autobiography written by me and then spoken by me. So. And it's going to be written kind of the same way I look at things and how I write and how I, you know, my writing style in my biography is very different than that of a lot of other things. One, in much like in real life, I'm very sarcastic in nature. It's not to be mean. It's just, I mean, when you read my autobiography next year, you'll learn. Just sometimes we have hard times in our lives and sometimes we have to endure a lot of crazy things. In order to get through those things, we have to find some type of humor, some type of escape to make sense out of it, especially at a young age. So the way I always approach life is with a joke, with a smile, and with sarcasm in that sense. But I'm also blunt and I'm honest, which is also going to be resonated in the book. I don't use real – this is a fun fact about me in general. I don't generally use real names for people in general. Like when I talk to people who I'm very – you know, who I'm fond of, it's usually and I think most people can understand this because usually, you know, I'll respond to someone, hey, buddy, hi, champ, hi this, hi that. What's going on, buddy? How you doing, my friend? How you doing, FR brother? Whatever the case may be. When it's my wife, it's usually sweets or love or whatever. My kids is usually, hey, son, or hey, what's up, dude, or something of that nature. My daughter's, you know, pumpkin. I got a story about that later on, too. We'll have to wait for my deep dive in my family for the pumpkin thing. That turned out to be my nickname once. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. Some other point. Excuse me, my tea, I just realized, is excitingly done. Excuse me as I pour the hot water into my tea. This is known as the steeping cycle for those people who have never made tea before. If you haven't, you should. If you do, cool. So I pour the water in to my special tea kettle that has a built-in basket right on the top of it, so it steeps right through, and it goes right into the top, the teapot, a little portable teapot, because sadly, I'm the only one who drinks the tea here. My daughter also drinks tea. My wife will drink tea when she feels like it. My son absolutely despises both tea and coffee. I know. I don't know where he came from. I'm just kidding. But my daughter and I have that bond as far as teas and coffees go. In fact, my daughter is a barista, so. In fact, doing big things in the barista world, so proud of her for that. But anywho, that's her commitment to tea, and I'd like to say that her coffee love probably came from yours truly, too. So we do something right. Allow me to get my It cup to put my tea in. My It cup, by the way, is a very giant teacup. Anyone who's ever seen my pictures on Instagram probably has seen the size of my teacup. I'm probably going to take it again to see it in general. The teacup. Actually, it's not just my teacup. It's my tea and coffee cup. It is a very large mug is what it is. Yeah, poured my tea in to my cup. And now I need my honey because you need honey for your tea. Yes, I put honey in my tea. And that's all I need. No milk, no sugar, just honey and tea. And also, for the singers out there in the world, people who have issues with their throat or whatever, a fun trivia thing, or not a fun trivia, this is a few quick hack for you. If you are a singer or someone who likes to talk or someone who needs to, you know, someone who uses your voice a lot, my best tip I can give you is honey, tea and lemon juice all mixed together, like a shot of lemon juice, honey, and some honey, tea, and lemon juice. And that'll cure pretty much any throat issues you might have. It soothes you. You'll be able to talk better. You'll have better vocal range. And that comes from someone who did a lot of that. Someday I should tell you guys about my time being in stage plays. I haven't done that yet. Although I can tell you next year I'm also going to be doing my own stage play, that I can tell you. And that has been something I've been working on for a little while. It was, you know, during 2000 and 2001, you know, I needed a challenge, if I'm being honest. I've written a lot of things. I've written stories, obviously. I've written song lyrics. I've written poems, you know, various other things. I've written speeches. I've written, you know, all kinds of various. I've made, you know, in school, I write all kinds of like reports and things like that. I wrote letters. I wrote speeches. You name it, I've written it. I've written articles. I've written reviews. You know, I read a lot of things and I love writing, but I also need a challenge once in a while. So, yeah, but I also like art and I like theater And I like a lot of things, really. But I've never actually written a stage play, and I've written screenplays before, like a movie or a TV screenplay. And actually, TV is a little different. TV, you got to write what's called a Bible for TV, which I've also done. I have to work on that one. But but definitely the stage play, which is already ready to go next year, that's going to be pretty awesome. It's a different kind of a concept. It is something a little fun. It's what they call a rock opera, I guess they call it. It's kind of like that. Think of like Rock of Ages or something of that nature, and you probably have an idea. It's not Rock of Ages. It's its own entity. It's going to be – it's a different thing. And it's on a topic that I think – it's about something that I don't think gets any kind of – a lot of airtime or a lot of things. And I'm debating whether or not to give you guys any kind of details. Actually, you know what? Because someone asked me today what it's about, and he told me that he wouldn't listen to it on this podcast, flat out, that was what he told me. When I told him, listen to my podcast, and I'll tell you what about tell everybody else about it, he said, no, I won't listen to your podcast, but you can tell me now. So, because he's not listening who about the film, the musical I'm doing, just the summary. So, basically, the musical I'm working on, or I've done, that's already been written. The musical is about life, or in general, the lifestyle of a busy subway station. A lot of people, you know, I know there's a lot of stage things about various other types of places, going places, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, fly places and drive places, and I don't feel like there's a lot of, like, I don't think there's really any kind of a thing out there that really kind of embraces the whole public transportation thing. And I don't know about where anyone else lives in the world, but I know that where I'm from, I learned how to take public transportation at a very young age because that was kind of how you got around. And I think it's a very valuable skill for people who are young to learn. I think parents should really show their kids. If you guys have public transportation that's available, I think it's kind of one of those life lessons your kids really should know. I mean, in a world where we can teach them arm bars and crescent kicks and how to sing, dance, play the guitar and whatever else, I think it's important also to show them these skills as well, how to get to and from without a car or something else. And I honestly have a lot of respect for people who, I mean, I myself grown up using public transportation, and that's one of the reasons why I waited so long to get my own driver's license, because I lived in the city before I was married and had kids and had other commitments. I mean, I can get to pretty much anywhere with just public transportation, or, you know, if I rode with people, I would carpool, in wrestling especially. They called them road wives. We travel to and from different cities with other wrestlers and stuff. Everyone chips in for gas or whatever. And it wasn't really until I started traveling to, like, conventions and other things like that and going to meet and greets with fans and things like that. That's really when I started driving on my own. But, again, I can do those things on a train or a bus and whatever. Because I lived in a city that had such a detailed and intricate and very revolutionary subway system, I am able to pretty much get to anywhere that has a subway system. I'll give you an example. Coming from the New England area, a lot of people will, you know, give a hard time to the New York subway system. I've heard people say how horrific the New York subway system is. I had to work Rhode Island Comic Con one year, not Rhode Island, New York Comic Con one year. To go into New York Comic Con, we had to take the train to and from the hotel to the building every day. And I was, you know, there, I did it all 4 days that I was there. So there's that. But here's the thing. I didn't even bat an eyelash at it. And as long as you know what stop to get on, where to get off, and where to go to come back to where you need to be, that's really all you really need to know to take a subway or any kind of public transportation. But I'm kind of getting sidetracked. But I'm just saying that I have a lot of respect for the people in which work in these buildings, because they have to deal with a lot of people who come and go all the time. And I think anyone who's everyone has heard, you know, has seen some of these people or heard a lot of these stories and whatever else. So what this musical is basically life at a subway system. And it's about the people who, you know, this one fictitious, you know, major subway system, you know, is the place that connects multiple different avenues, the different people who frequent these things. Because a lot of people, you know, a lot of people who are successful anywhere will use public transportation, lawyers, doctors, students. And a lot of people do these things on a regular basis without even, you know, bat an eyelash. But if you look at a lot of media, a lot of musicals, television, there's very few and far between things that really show those kinds of people. And this is people we're going to focus on who make this train station really, you know, what it is that makes it so special, and the people in which who make it that. So that's what this musical is about. And of course it has, you know, its numbers that are written in there and a couple other things in there, and has its own characters, its own storyline. I'm not going to go into great detail, but that's kind of the cliff notes of what the musical is. It's called Rail Life. So, you know, it's a play on words, of course, Rail Life. That's R-A-I-L-L-I-F-E. That's a play on the, you know, train, rail, you know, commuter rail, et cetera. I don't think I really had to explain that to you guys. I'm sure people can get that two from two. But that is the musical that's coming out next year that I'm very excited for, that I'm going to need a lot of people for, and talented people. And that goes into my next little thing here. So with all these programs coming up, with all my different acting things coming up and projects coming up, one of the biggest things that sets me aside when I write a project, or films especially, this is honestly how I cast. And honestly, anyone who's ever came to work for me on a film set, anyone's worked with me on a film set, you kind of know how I run a film set. It's a family-run atmosphere. We're a team. It's not my movie. It's our movie. I show the same commitment before filming. I believe in having some type of event to get everyone to know each other. So we usually have like a group building exercise before, prior to filming. Everyone who is going to be working closely with each other, I'll try to get those people to kind of link together to kind of get that bond that you're going to have in the film world, depending on how long the film work, you know, the shoot goes. And what this film project's going to be, it's a collection of short stories. And, you know, kind of the same theme, but different stories all together. And this is going to be something that is really cool, but it's also going to be something that's going to have to utilize a lot of various different acting talents from different ages and different ranges. And I'm looking forward to it. I always respect and always appreciate the people who help me get to where I need to be in life. I had the opportunity years ago to meet William Zabka. You guys probably know him better as Johnny Lawrence from Cobra Kai now. But let me tell you about an awesome conversation I had with William Zabka years and years and years ago. We were at a meet and greet doing our own thing years ago. It was in my home state, and it was a little hole-in-the-wall meet and greet thing for fans or whatever, one of those fan fest type things. He's signing, I'm signing, whatever. And we got to talk, and then, of course, I grew up with the Karate Kid, and being someone who's trained in martial arts, I mean, I have to be admitting, and I think I talked to the Mina boys, and they kind of felt the same way about how they make these shows look like these people are so, you know, make it look so easy, what we do, what real fighters do all the regular basis. And Karate Kid, when I was younger, used to drive me nuts when I was younger because of how, even when the Karate Kid came out, and depending on my age, and because of my age, I could tell you all of the things that would never happen in martial arts, all of the flaws in the logic behind all of it. even at that age, remember, I trained starting at 4 or 5, and I'm doing tournaments from 5 all the way till I was 18 years old. And again, that one draw in when I was 10. Yes, I had to stop dramatically for a second to remember that. And listen, before I go forward, I have to explain why that bothers me. It's not because I got a. It's not because I got the tie. And a lot of people say, "Well, you got a tie. You didn't lose." For me, it is worse knowing that I don't know who won or who lost. I don't know if I'm better or worse. And what happened was, after that competition, that school ended up closing that we were facing, and in supplementary, I never saw that person in any tournaments ever again. So I went on from 10 all the way to 18 trying to make myself feel better about that one draw because I didn't win or lose. And I am a clear-cut person when it comes to a fight. You either win or you lose. There's no tie, kind of like the Yoda thing, right? Words of the great Yoda, do or don't do. There is no try. You either go in and win or you lose. You go in and you lose, and you go in and you learn something from that, you dust yourself off, and you take whatever you did then and you apply it differently, which is something I always recommend. I got one draw when I was 10. Not a loss, a draw, and that bothered me more than losing did. I would much rather know that I lost than knowing that I didn't win or lose. And that's a pride thing. I admit that. But it's something that hyped with me, and it still does, that I got that one draw. And I never got to get the answer. Who wins? Who is a better fighter? He was a tough kid. I was tough too, but it was a draw. Anyway, I just had to throw it and explain why that is, that that bothered me. Because so people have an idea of what that means. And when you're, again, someone who's passionate about something, this is kind of what you should be feeling as well, I would imagine. But, you know, so many people out there that helped me get to where I needed. But anyway, I was talking to William Zabka at this event, and I was telling him about the issues I had with, you know, the Karate Kid. And I was, see, here's the difference between me and a lot of other people in the world. I'm blunt and I'm honest. And it doesn't matter what you're doing. I'm respectful about it. Like I told William Zabka, I don't have an issue with you or, you know, the people involved in the movie. I just don't like the movie and how, you know, people, you know, kids will look at this film and think this is what karate is. William Zabka can tell you that prior to doing Karate Kid, he did amateur, he did Greco-Roman wrestling, which I learned then. And we talked about it then. And that's actually kind of how we started going into the rest of everything else we talked about was, you know, the common bond we had in Greco-Roman wrestling. So fun fact, William Zabka did high school wrestling. But we started talking about that, and of course wrestling came into play, and I got to answer the same questions there. And then we got into the Karate Kid, and I told him my things. And you know what was funny is I told him then, I said, you know, here's the thing about the whole Karate Kid thing. In karate, we're trained not to really instigate issues. Like you learn self-defense. A lot of people, that's why they take martial arts to begin with. They're either getting picked on or bullied. They want to become stronger in multiple ways, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and whatnot. So they learn karate or martial arts in the way to defend themselves when something, you know, comes into play, right? Well, in the Karate Kid, if you remember, I used to have an issue where Daniel Russo half the time would instigate a lot of the issues that he brought upon him. And then, like, the scene where Mr. Miyagi, right, Pat Morita, Arnold from Happy Days, went on to fight all of the Cobra Kai students, a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, they were bullies and all this other stuff. Yeah, they might not have been the coolest guys in the world, and they didn't need 5 and 6 on 1. Yeah, granted. But here's the problem. That would never have happened if Daniel LaRusso didn't go into a bathroom where he didn't need to be in and spray the leading bully with water for no reason. Because he would have gone to the dance, had a good time, which he was, and Johnny Lawrence and the gang would have had their own fun, and would have been all over. But no, Daniel LaRusso had to go spray Johnny Lawrence with water So Johnny Lawrence and his group learning about Pride and, you know, what the heck is this guy doing? And again, I'm not condoning why they did what they did. Again, that wasn't really on Johnny Lawrence. That was, again, his trainer. And that's honestly what it comes down to is your training. Who's training you people? That's another thing I said. Because William Zabka, in the end of Part of Kid 1 and leading into 2, he actually showed remorse and respect to Daniel LaRusso. And, of course, I'm having this conversation with William Zabka, and I told him, I said, you know, why are you the bully automatically? And what was that character's motive? Because you weren't necessarily a bad guy. I mean, yeah, you know, you had a girlfriend, Daniel LaRusso tried taking her from you. And again, I just pointed out the whole thing. I had an issue with Daniel LaRusso spraying him with water when he didn't need to. That wouldn't have happened. That would have led up to anything else. The whole thing would be done. But he continued. And, you know, I'm not saying, again, that what they did was right either, but I also have to say that if you're in a situation where you're being bullied, then it's probably not a good idea to antagonize the person who's bullying you. But in the same sense, if they're bullying you, I honestly believe that the only way to get them to stop is to stand up to them one-on-one myself. That's just my belief. Because that's the only really way to end that, sadly. And I'm not talking about physical violence. I'm saying about standing up for yourself. And that usually will back down the bully because they're not expecting it. So, fun facts about bullying. Anywho. Yeah, I know. Fun facts about bullying is that bullies don't like when you stand up for yourself. And actually, when you take away that power that they have, then they got nothing. And then they quickly realize that their thing is a sham anyway. And that's the deal with bullies, unfortunately. That's who I've been fighting since day one, ladies and gentlemen. Anywho, that was my conversation with William Zabka. And, of course, fast forward to years later, and, of course, Cobra Kai comes out. And what is the premise of Cobra Kai? It's about looking at life through Johnny Lawrence's eyes and not the great Daniel LaRusso that we're supposed to like. I got to tell you, I watched all the Karate Kid movies because these are things that our sensei had us watch and the opposite reasons, what not to do, what's not real. Because these, again, this is how you learn things. This is how we do and we prepare. We find out what's real and what's not. I'm going to give you an example when it comes to training and stuff like that. And when it comes to, like, movie toughness, movie fighting and television fighting and real combat and real fighting and whatever, when we learn martial arts, it's not about, you know, how many points you're going to get, because that's not what's going to get you where you need to be. That's not why you learn the martial arts. You learn martial arts for self-defense. So if someone was to threaten yourself or someone you care about's life, you could protect yourself without having to use a actual weapon. All honesty, you are using a weapon, the most dangerous weapon ever. I'm going to end my show today with a trivia question. And when I come back on this podcast, I'm going to find out who's listening to this podcast, and I'm going to see if they know the answer. Or I'm going to save the trivia question at the end of the podcast, and I want you who are listening to message me on Instagram, because I'm back on there again, and tell me the answer to the question. I'll ask you that at my end, that little homework. But anywho, that was my conversation with William Zabka, and I also think that was important to see that there's more to a story than what we are led to believe. We learn martial arts to defend ourselves and the people we care about. And I know a lot of people, you know, there's UFC and all that stuff. That's to provide for your family. But also, you would need to have a backup for what happens when you get injured, because that will happen too. The more serious you are, the better fighter you are, the more injuries will come, and you can expect more time for you to be on the shelf. And what are you going to do when that is, you know, temporarily on hold, when you're mending? Because the way fighting works, the way UFC works, MMA works, if you're not in a physical fight and you're not fighting, you're not getting paid. You don't get paid for not fighting. So, you know, you can do all of the whatever else you want to do all you want, but if you're not fighting, you're not making any money. And that's the hard reality, and that's why it's such a tough thing to break into. Because I'm talking about UFC, boxing, any of those combat type of things. The reality is, you know, it can be very, very good for you if that's what you want to do, but it can also, it's going to take a toll on your body, regardless how good you are, regardless what training you have, you're going to get injured eventually. And that's the sad reality of it. But here's what makes the difference between being a fighter and being someone who's in that world and someone who's just, you know, a casual fan. A fighter will say, yeah, I know. I know I'm going to get injured. But yet they go in anyway, and they put the same work ethic. And that is what a fighter is. That's what a warrior is. A warrior is someone who gets kicked and who goes down and will get up, look at their opponent in the eye and say, is that all you got? Facts on that, because I've done this. One of my favorite moves, actually, is the psychological thing in tournaments. You know, I have to say, I kind of wish there was more places to watch, you know, these tournaments, because I would love to sit there and just to pinpoint different things, because I'm going to go into that in a minute, too, like I promised. I'm going to give you the three or four fighters that people ask me about and how I would defeat them right after this. When I met William Zabka, that was an awesome conversation. Years later, Cobra Kai came to be. I would become friends with Jesse Cove. I don't know if you guys know who that is. Jesse Cove is the son of Martin Cove. You guys probably know better as the evil sensei, John Kreese. But I met Jesse Cove a long time ago. We went to film school together. Really great guy. Also trained in martial arts. And he actually, a lot of people don't know, he works on the show. And I was actually really happy that one time when I was at Monster Mania not long ago, I was actually able to catch up with Jesse. It was so good to see him. He's still taller than me, the guy. But he is such a great guy. And it was like old times. Of course, knowing Jesse, I didn't ever put two and two together that Jesse Cove was the son of Mark Cove, because I never asked, because I don't care. I don't care who someone's related to. You know, if you're cool, you're cool. I don't care if someone has a name attached to them. If you're cool, you're cool. If you're not cool, I call you on that too. Like me, people like Michael Fishman, he's built his own name. I could talk to Michael Fishman all day. I think I have the most respect for people like him and people who just, regular people who don't have that kind of, oh, I'm so-and-so, I don't have time. It's not going to work. Anyway, the other person I got to meet at a Monster Mania and to show my gratitude and thanks for was Danny Trejo. How many people don't know who Danny Trejo is? Show of hands. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe you people. Anyway, Danny Trejo, for those people who don't know, he is – I mean, probably most known for being Machete in the Machete movies. He's also the go-to BA Mexican wannabe, the go-to kind of tough guy Mexican when you need one. He is Machete in the Machete films. He's been in everything from Spy Kids to, you know, various other different things, a bunch of Rob Zombie movies. He's been in, you know, has a resume that goes out the door. Here's what I have a lot of respect for Danny Trejo for. People may or may not know, Danny Trejo, one, is a very accomplished boxer, which, by the way, he happens to be a wrestling fan and a fan of himself, which a lot of respect to Danny Trejo. And a shout-out to Danny Trejo, not that he's listening, but Trejo is an awesome guy. But I got to thank Danny Trejo because here's a couple things. One, Danny Trejo earned his own way in life. He did not have all sunshine rainbows. In fact, Danny Trejo was someone who life might have just given up on normally. Danny Trejo was someone who did time in prison. He was one of the most notorious people in all of the prisons. I'm talking jail, prison, one of the most feared inmates ever in solitary confinement, one of the most dangerous people everyone meet. Here we are, fast forward. By the way, I highly recommend this book, Trejo. It's a fantastic read. I read it. My wife read it. We loved it. Great book, Trejo. Go read it. You'll learn more about him. But, you know, I read the book first before me, which is why I was talking to Danny Trejo, and what a great guy he was. And of course, he's a wrestling fan, so of course, you know, people love wrestlers, and that's me. But his workout regimen, his boxing career, his fighting career, but the fact that he was in prison for a good amount of his life, and that a lot of people might have given up on him, he continued making going forward, and he saw opportunities. Do you know that Danny Trejo today is known as one of the most heroic people out there? A humble individual, very humble, because, hey, I'm just in the right place. He literally saved a child's life from a car accident, a burning car. Danny Trejo saved this person. He didn't have to in a car accident. That's a real-life hero. That's not someone who's paid to be a tough guy. That's just someone who's in the right place at the right time, who's willing to do something. That's the difference between people like the wannabes and the real life. That was what Danny Trejo did. Go look it up. Go read his book. He'll tell you more about it. I got to thank Danny Trejo for that, and he thanked me, of all people, for believing in him, for like that, and for, you know, continuing to do what I do. He said, what I do will have meaning someday, and he, you know, all kinds of other things, and I have a lot of respect for Danny Trejo because he remembers those things, and he understands what it's like to struggle. I know what it's like to struggle, just like anyone else in the world does. And you know what? Doesn't matter what your struggle is. You can all. It's up to you how do you get out of that struggle and how you keep moving forward and how you achieve whatever it is that you're achieving. Facts on that. So, thank you to Danny Trejo, and I want to thank especially my friends Dave Hagen and the Hagen family who run the Monster Mania event. And again, I am a very proud member, and I'm part of the working force behind it, and I'm proud to be part of that. Dave and his family have done such a great job giving me the opportunity to thank fellow celebrities and people who have made a difference in my own life, because we don't just automatically become who we are. We have to be inspired. We have to have someone who we've seen prior who has held that torch for us to get there. And I'm someone who is able to appreciate that. And I thank those people for those endless efforts to give me the opportunity to do those things. People like Bret the Hitman Hart in pro wrestling, who was only 6 feet tall at the time he wrestled. A lot of people who looked at wrestlers, they always picture these 6'9" muscle heads. Bret Hart, who had great conditioning, was in great shape, was only 6 feet tall. His work ethic, his technical athletes, his training regimen made him one of the best pro wrestlers of all time in pro wrestling, which is why I have a lot of respect for people like Bret Hart. And he paved the way for people who were like me, who was 6 feet tall, which prior to Bret Hart, we wouldn't even be looked at in the wrestling world. Facts on that. Now, that being said, people like Danny Trejo who have hit rock bottom, who have had hard times, I know all too well. I can tell you I've had hard times. I've gotten up and I've succeeded. I've gone from literally being nowhere, not having a place to live, to having my own place and having an amazing time. I've gone from struggling to eat to eating at the best restaurants, but always remembering how I got there and then bringing someone with me to pay them forward. My autobiography that comes out next year is going to have these stories of how I got to be where I am. It's called The Rise and Fall and the Rebirth of the F4L Icon. Long title, I know. Boy, is it worth it. I have made my own life, and you guys all can too. It's because I don't quit, I don't give up, and I keep moving forward, much like all of these other people. And I want to thank those guys. I want to thank the Hagen. I look forward to see them in August when I come to guys see when I work on them again and whatnot. Another shout-out, I want to shout-out the Gabe and Austin of the Father-Son Fist Bump. They were on our. We've been trying to working on a podcast together, like doing them on mine or whatever, or me on theirs, and it just hasn't worked out. They've been very busy though, in fairness, so I understand how it goes. But Gabe and Austin, you know, you guys, you know, I have nothing but respect for you guys, and especially when it comes to, I'm a sucker when it comes to father-son duos. I am a father-son duo, and actually my daughter. So I'm actually a family guy, let's face it. I'm a sucker for a family. I'm the first to admit it. I am a little bit soft when it comes to family stuff because family means the most to me. My wife and my kids mean more to me than anything I will ever achieve. And one of the biggest things I say is that the reason I do everything is for them, to inspire them and to give them something to want to aspire for. And if I can give them a tip or a trait or something to help them do it, I would do it all day. I would give my life to either any one of them. And being a good dad is more than just bringing home food and putting food on the table and putting room for that. That's the old way of thinking. There's a lot more to being a dad, being a responsible father than that. There's more to it. There's that, and then there's being able to help them with their homework, knowing what's going on in their life. How is your day going? Who are your friends? What's going on? And a lot of the problems a lot of people have is they don't have a lot of that. The people who I've mentioned today, these are good people. These are people who have that in their pocket. Gabe and Austin, it's awesome to see the relationship they have. My son, my family, we have that same bond. It's awesome to see that regimented. Jack and Tim, the lucky ones, as we call them, they're the music group from Britain's Got Talent. They were over here in America. They just wished America a happy 4th of July, even though they're in England. Why they do that? Because they respect us. And we respect them because they're awesome individuals. Tim is a great father, I can tell you that. Jack is learning from one of the best. They are a great team, a great unit. They have other family. And, I'm a sucker when it comes to family stuff. Sorry. And when you have a group or team that works together like that, there is no one in this life that will mean more to you than your own family. Facts on that. And when you can do some type of thing where you can actually work with your kids, no matter what age they are, that is a father pride that I can't even describe it. When I first started doing Dream Masters with my son, it was a great joy, not just to be able to call matches and put together these things and see his laughter and whatever, which I'll be a sucker. Again, watching my kids having a great time laughing and whatever, that's one of my favorite things. I'll be the first to admit that. Because one of my biggest weaknesses is seeing people cry, and I can't deal with that. I will do everything I can to make someone not cry. That's a fact on that, too. But, Gabe and Austin, Jack and Tim, the lucky ones, any of these groups that have family type of thing, they're awesome. And I hope to some point we get to come on this show together so we can, celebrate that together. I think that's important. I've had my friend Tim on here, and he's a great dad. And we're going to have him come on here again, Tim. We're going to do that horror thing where we're going to, dissect some of these horror movies and the cliches and what we would do in real life versus what they do in, the films. That's going to be fun, and Tim's going to be the great guy to do that with, and I look forward to it. I can also tell you that Dave Hagan of Boston Mania, eventually he's going to come back on here, and it's going to be great. And a lot of these other people I mentioned too. In the meantime, I also have to tell you real quick, just before I get into the three or four fighters and how I would fight them, I'm going to. This is going to be pretty epic, folks. It is. So, Walker Campbell is going to be coming back on the podcast. Jackson R. Scott's coming back on the podcast. And again, working on the Russells to get them in here. Of course, maybe I might do a watch along, but again, the YouTube shows are not going to happen as much as they were. So I just did a show for the 4th of July because it's the 4th of July. And because we have such a worldwide audience and because the emails I got from people who that this show means, just because everyone, some other people on the show who didn't appreciate it or whatever, I'm not going to punish our worldwide audience who actually respect what we do if our stars do. Don't. We have plenty of stars who do respect our fans and their fans, so we're going to reward those people with that. And that's why we're probably going to go back to the three shows a month. So the 4th, the 14th, and the 24th. Pretty easy. We just had our 4th show. It just happened to be yesterday. Go watch it. It's epic. I can tell you this. I worked on it. Alone. Anyway. One second, folks. Now, what else? Oh, yeah, I'm going to give you my three fighters. Okay. So I put a poll out and I asked people to give me a suggestion to someone, because I want to see if I can come up with a solution to who I could face and how I would beat them, right? If I'm going to face them. And we're talking about martial arts again. We're talking about MMA. And before I go into that, let me just tell you what I'm trained in, because I think that's important to kind of understand, so to speak. One second, folks. I have technical difficulties with my equipment. What else is new? I'll tell you, folks, I hate modern technology sometimes. Anywho, sorry about that. Technical difficulties, annoyances. Go on with it. Anywho, come on. Pain in the neck. Anyway, folks. All right. You know what's good about me is that I don't give up so easily. Another one of my many traits. I see an issue and I sit. Technical issues, I will continue working on it until it works. That is the stubborn Irishman in me as well. As I... Bear with me, folks. There we go. See, I win. As always. Thank you very much. All right, folks. So you asked, I asked people to do a poll on who, what fighters, to suggest some fighters for me, and I was going to watch to see how I would defeat those said fighters. And let me first tell you again what I'm trained in. We'll go over that so it'll make some sense. I am trained in Chuck Kudo, which is the Chuck Norris style karate, Kenpo karate, judo, Muay Thai, and amateur with Greco-Roman wrestling and grappling, and, of course, boxing. So, as you can see, kind of all over the place, different ranges. And if you guys think that, you know, a lot of these things are similar, trust me, they're very much different. So, and a lot different, some of them. Anyway, in a MMA match, in an MMA-style fight, it's pretty much, or tournament, it's pretty much anything goes. So, there's that. So the three fighters, people had asked me how I would defeat them. Let me tell you, they weren't easy either, because I had to watch their fights and dissect various other things. One of them being Floyd Mayweather. Of course, that was going to be on there, because why not? Okay, so Floyd Money Mayweather, who's a boxer, and he is also someone who's known to have a thing with MMA guys, because historically, and I think we all remember his little tisk with MMA's, you know, Irish tough guy, Conor McGregor. But see, the difference between Conor McGregor and what I would do to defeat Floyd, my name is Mayweather. By the way, fun trivia, before I say that, the person who I was going to face in the MMA thing was being trained by Floyd Mayweather. So fun trivia on that. Also, it was given the green light by Floyd Mayweather. Anywho, how would I defeat Floyd Money Mayweather? What would be my strategy? Well, first of all, Floyd Mayweather is great condition. He's a boxer. I'm talking MMA. And I know that he fought Conor McGregor, and Conor McGregor lost, I guess, theoretically, in pointage. He didn't get knocked out, to my knowledge. And when I looked at it, he did not get knocked out. He was lost by a decision. And he got lost because, you know, Floyd Mayweather kept on dancing around and Conor kept on chasing him, all honestly. So how would I fight? How would my fight with Floyd Money Mayweather, the boxer? Well, if we're talking to MMA, I'm going to already have an advantage over the boxer because, you know, in MMA, in order to get a point on someone, you have to make contact. You have to get close to me eventually. And this also brings in the, when I mentioned earlier, rope-a-dope, the rope-a-dope technique, which is a very old an old boxing strategy. I think historically speaking, the boxers that made that famous is one. I don't know if you guys ever heard of these boxers. For Muhammad Ali or George Foreman. Yes, George Foreman, before becoming a grill guy and making a grill, he was actually a boxer. But anyway, George Foreman and, you know, Muhammad Ali, these are strategies they made famous, the old rope-a-dope technique, right? Rope-a-dope was you let the guy burn himself out. He can make all these shots. We're talking about boxing. He's going to make multiple shots. Basically, the guy gets tired. He punches himself out, and you let his endurance take over. And then when he gets tired, that's when you just one strong right hook pull him out. Because they're so exhausted, any contact will knock them loopy. That's kind of how that works, unfortunately. And all honesty, when it comes to Floyd Mayweather, a lot of people think, well, he's got great conditioning because he's dancing around the ring. Cool. Let him dance around the ring. If it's boxing, he's going to dance around the ring regardless. He's going to come in. And if you're mixing – we're talking about MMA, though. We're not talking about a boxing match. So eventually, Floyd Mayweather would have to come near me in order to, you know, get a point to, you know, get that at least. And when he came in, he would already be done because he'd come in and he'd get the close, and that's when he would find out how quick I am. Because I look like I'm slow. I'm a big guy, right? I'm 6 feet tall, and I'm 245 pounds. So I'm a big guy, which all honesty would have to be an exhibition if you look at the height, size-wise, because in UFC and in boxing, you don't get to fight people who are outside your weight class, really, traditionally speaking. I mean, there's other things you can do around it. So that, I mean, if it's exhibition, it's a different story. That's what we're talking about. So in this scenario, I would let Floyd Mayweather do all the dancing around he wanted. And then eventually when he comes in to come get some, and when he comes in to make a shot, he's going to go into that boxing regimen because that's what he's trained in. So once he dances around in the fight, I'm going to stand right where I am. I'm not going to go anywhere. That's what I'm going to do first. I'm going to take my stance. And of course, if he's going to go circles around me, I'm going to, you know, obviously follow his eyes. And I don't follow him. I follow his eyes. Where his eyes are going, I'm going to go with him. My eyes are going to meet his eyes at all times. So if he's dancing around in circles, then my eyes are going to be dancing around in circles, but I'm standing in one location, one grounded location. I'm talking about different strategy for different people. Floyd Mayweather, let him dance around the ring. And when he comes in to get a shot, to get that point, he's already there because he's there. I'm going to lock in. I'm going to go for the double leg takedown. You take him to the ground, and he's lost because he doesn't know what to do with that. He's a boxer. Boxers need to be on their feet. And that's how you beat Floyd Mayweather. Let him get tired. Let him jump around the ring. And then in an MMA match, let him jump around the ring all he wants. And then when he gets close enough, because he has to eventually, you stay right where you are. And when he gets close to you, you just double leg takedown, boom, down. And when you take him to the ground, he's all done because he can't do anything on the ground. He's a boxer. There you go. And because I have the Greco-Roman wrestling, because of my judo and because of the combination of the taekwondo and everything else, it just takes over, and then he wouldn't know what to do once he's on the mat because that's not something he's familiar with. That's how you beat Floyd Money Mayweather, to the person who suggested Floyd Mayweather. And another person someone suggested was, of course, Conor McGregor, because that had to be the next one, right? Conor McGregor... I have a lot of respect for all honor fighters, let me tell you. But if I had to fight Conor McGregor, I guess for me, it would be my strategy would be I know that he has injuries, and I would be exposing those injuries. I would be looking for the because this comes down to the psychology and the strategy game, the chess game, right? What do I know about my opponent? That's one thing that you need to know 100% before you go into fight. Who am I fighting? Now, when you're in a tournament where you have to fight multiple people, you have to, you know, face several people, you should know everyone who you're going to face because eventually you're going to face them. So, like I told the Mena boys a couple weeks ago, when you're in these events where all these fights are taking place, where, you know, you obviously want to be, you know, want to be out there the whole time, you don't want to be seen out there. But all honesty, I sit and watch every single fight that everyone else has. because what if I have to face them at some point down the road? If I'm done with my fight, then I'm done with my fight. But if I stay out there and watch everything else, watch all these other fighters, eventually, it could be that night or could be in something down the road, you're going to see that person again eventually. That's how the circuit works. And that's kind of how you can kind of pinpoint, what is this person doing? Conor McGregor, what do I know about Conor McGregor? I know that he has a bad knee. I know that he has a strong, you know, he has a strong power game. I know that he has a strong working game. I know not to allow myself to get into any kind of a guillotine, not to get into an arm bar. I know that he's going to be looking to get a lot of the right hands, the left hands and whatnot. So honestly, the best way to beat Conor McGregor is to work on something that's going to isolate his knee. And as cheap as that sounds, he has a knee injury. So my opportunity is going to get him into a knee bar eventually. That's going to be my focus, is getting him into a knee bar. And once I get him in the knee bar, which will take some work maybe, he's going to have a great conditioning, because Conor McGregor does have a lot of great conditioning. But eventually, that's going to play an effect. The other thing is, if he's super angry, he's going to lose focus because he's just going to start throwing fists. He's going to start throwing a hissy fit. And I love Conor McGregor. I get it. But I've seen it. He gets very angry. Once you start getting in the person's head, like Conor McGregor, you get him in the angry face and you get him enraged almost when you're fighting him, that's when he starts throwing fists. It starts throwing wildly. That goes for anybody who's in a situation like that. Anger, for the most part, will lead to someone's defeat all the time. When they start, you know, getting focused on just getting to hurt you because they feel upset, they already lost the fight, and you already have the edge because you only have the psychology factor. You know what you're doing. If I'm fighting Conor McGregor, one, I'm probably going to try to get into his head. He is going to do the same thing to me, but here's the problem. Conor McGregor expects to be a mouthy guy and tries to Conor McGregor has no problem backing it up either. Again, I have a lot of respect for Conor McGregor. I love Conor McGregor. He's a great guy. He's a tough guy, and he makes me proud of being Irish and stuff. But if someone asked me how I would defeat him, yeah, one, I would get him angry. Two, when it came to his, you know, cutting down the opponents like he likes to do, his mind games, right? Conor McGregor likes to use the psychological mind games that I'm talking about, where he talks about the opponent and he'll mouth off to them. He'll be, you know, all these things. With me, who has a history with being able to cut a promo, to talk to someone, to verbally be able to destroy someone before they even lay a hand on me, I will get him so enraged by my you know, conduct as far as, you know, cutting promos leading up to the fight and whatever else. And it wouldn't be me just, you know, ranting on things. I would just say, listen, Conor, bring it all. I'm just going to hurt you. But in the same mindset as I literally know that I'm winding him up for this fight. I myself am keeping calm. No matter what he's going to say to me, I know what his strategy is already. I know that his strategy is to get in my head. In order to beat him, you get hit back on his. So get him angry. Get him upset. I know that sounds like a dangerous idea, an angry Conor McGregor. Get him angry. Get him enraged. And then when you get him in the ring, he's already so focused, he's going to come at you like a wild animal. When he does that, you go for the knee bar, boom, he taps. Because he's so focused, he's already forgotten. He's already there. You have to keep the mindset, you know what you're doing. You can't get upset. You have to keep level-headed. No matter what he's going to say to you, and you have to know also, he's going to come at you with everything. You have to be able to withstand every blow that he's going to come at you. He's going to make a contact. Suck it up. Go for the knee bar. That's your strategy with Conor McGregor. All right. I picked two. I think those are two pretty big names, too. All right. Another person I had was Mike Tyson. Why would someone want me to fight Mike Tyson? Anyway, Mike Tyson, boxer, world champion boxer. One thing, he's, you know, very old. How would I defeat Mike Tyson? Probably not fighting Mike Tyson would be the best way to beat Mike Tyson. But all honesty, if it had down to fighting Mike Tyson, he's getting older. And, you know, eventually I would probably, you know, I'm going to say it. He also has a short fuse. I would probably get him angry if it's MMA, again, get him angry, and you know, hopefully he does something that will make a mistake. Because again, once you start losing control, you'd already be done. The thing about Mike Tyson makes him different, which makes me question, would I want to get him angry, is the fact that I know in boxing, if it's a straight-up boxing match, then yes, my strategy is absolutely to get him angry, because if it's boxing where you can be disqualified for doing things, then my strategy would definitely, and if I can win by disqualification, which, by the way, I'm not saying that this is the easy way out, but you asked me the best way to beat these people. If it's boxing, then I want to get Mike Tyson angry, so he's going to do something that's cost him the victory, like getting himself disqualified, like trying to bite my ear, for example, which he has a history of. The other thing is he's getting older. And how long can Mike Tyson run around a ring for now? He is in great shape now. He is in good shape for a guy his age. So am I. But again, I'm not going to be jumping around the ring. Even in boxing, I'm going to do the rope-a-dope. I'm staying right where I am until you come near me. It's the old Venus fly. I used to call it the Venus flytrap or the cobra. Actually, that's actually a stance in some arts that I were known in. If anyone's ever watched the Snake Eat, that's kind of what I'm describing. That's kind of what the fighting style is. That's kind of what I've been using for a long time. Let the person come to you. And when they come to you, they're all done. And I've seen a lot of people do this where they come in and they'll walk up to you. Don't do that. You just need to be right where you need to be. Let them come to you. Because when they're coming to you, they have a focus. You can see their eye, where they're going to go. And I can't say how many times I've seen it. No matter what you do when you're fighting anyone, always keep your eyes on their eyes. Don't worry about what their legs or arms are doing. Don't worry about what their legs are doing, or legs, feet, whatever else. Don't worry about their hands, their shoulders. You watch their eyes, because their eyes aren't going to lie. Their eyes are going to tell them where they're going to hit you next. If you look at their eyes, you know what they're going to do. You can see if they're worried. You can see if they're concerned. You can see what they're planning on doing next. If their eyes starting to glaze over, you can see fear. You can see nervousness. You can see pain, right? You can see anger. Always keep your eyes on their eyes. Don't worry about their hands. Don't worry about their feet. Yeah, they're going to come kick you with those things, but if you watch their eyes, you know when those other things are going to follow. That's a fact on that, and that's anyone who's a trainer in martial arts will tell you that as well. Never take your eyes off your opponent, right? Keep your eyes on their eyes. Doesn't matter where their hands are going, and that's going to lead into a victory as well. So that is three people. Mike Tyson, I would beat by, if it's boxing, then just get him disqualified, and I'd win by that. But if I had to fight him one-to-one, just hopefully that, you know, get him to come near me and hopefully make him tire himself out and then take him out the old-fashioned way. I have a pretty decent right hook and a left hook. I guess in combat I do have the gift to have both hands, but anyway. But the biggest thing I can say, whenever you want to do in training, combat sports, and or whatever else, it doesn't matter what your sport is, just do your homework on people. And when you do that, you really do allow yourself to learn, be you, and to succeed. You allow yourself the ability to be the combat specialist you are. You allow yourself to have the notion, to have the drive that'll give you the skills that you need to seek and destroy, so to speak. I also suggest, this is something that I always, this is another strategy I have for combat people, for people who've done, whether it be wrestling, Greco-Roman, or MMA, or anything like that, actually any sport, again, anything really. Music is a huge help for me. And sometimes I associate a song with either a certain fight I'm having or an event that I'm having, or I will have a song that I'll have in my head that will help me to work through whatever I'm doing. Because this is, again, you know, when I'm in a combat and when I'm in a tournament match, my mind is already, how am I going to beat you and how long is it going to take? That's where my mind goes. It's not about, arm bars and kicking. Now, how long do I want this to go? And because most likely 9 out of 10 times, the minute they step on that mat, I already know if I want, if how long the fight's going to be. Confidence, you can't hide confidence. You can't hide weakness. You can't hide fear, no matter how hard you try. Confidence, to me, I walk on a mat, and I know. Here's honestly how I look at things. I usually say this thing where I don't know what you can do to me, but I absolutely know what I can do to you. And that's ultimately the best tool you have, is knowing everything you have. Every tool you have in your arsenal, that's what you need to believe as a combat person or a skilled person in that set. So there you go. I gave all kinds of tips to everybody today, and I feel like this show kind of bounced around. But I thought it was important to jump into these conversations when I could. And also to show that you can literally achieve multiple things in many different ways. And before we go, I said I was going to give you a trivia question before we go. So before we go, here's your trivia question. If you're in a dojo, what is, you're in a dojo with samurai swords, bow staffs, katana blades, nunchucks, throwing stars, blowguns, all around your dojo or your gym or whatever. What is the most powerful weapon that you have in the dojo? Again, you're in a dojo, standard dojo. You have nunchucks, katana blades, scythes, shooting stars, blowguns, a crossbow, scythes, nunchucks. Your standard weapons are all around the wall. What is the weapon in your school that is the most powerful weapon that you can have? That's your trivia question. Hit me up on Instagram on hold on, I gotta even tell you my Instagram because I'm so not used to using my Instagram again. All right, I'll tell you my Instagram again, if you don't know it by now. All right, it's F4L Icon, Icon, Sean, Jazzstevens 1. So you go there on Instagram and DM me and let me know what is the most powerful weapon in a dojo. Size, katanas, bow staffs, blowguns, crossbows, you name it. What is the most powerful weapon in the dojo? That's it. And with 90 seconds left, that's your homework. You want to be on the guest on the show, contact me at WOW, W-O-W, Dream Matches, DREAMMATCHES at gmail.com. Instagram I just gave you. I am your host with the most, the Icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, saying peace, everyone. May all your dreams come true.